Hey, I want to thank the organizers for inviting me. It's my second time here. It's really a nice conference. I'm going to change my, I changed my title a little bit for two reasons. First of all, I was going to talk about something else that is sort of in progress, and it's so much in progress that I didn't get a chance to actually prepare a talk on it. So I'll talk about something else. I'll talk about universal operator growth and the emergent hydrodynamics in quantum systems. And I think it matches quite well with the topic of today's talk. So maybe I shouldn't regret it. This was work done with a great student at Berkeley, Daniel Parker, and two postdocs, also fantastic postdocs, Yang-Yu Cao and Thomas Cafidi. Thomas is actually will be almost a local soon. He is moving to Toronto this summer. So the main motivation is coming from condensed matter is to be able to study dynamics and compute dynamical properties of strongly coupled quantum matter. For example, try to understand transport in strongly correlated electron materials like these fascinating and ubiquitous linear in T behavior in seen in cuprates and other strongly correlated materials. Also, certain relaxation experiments in cold atoms show fascinating behavior that is not captured within a standard Boltzmann transport technique or any other weak coupling approach to transport. And often calculating these dynamics means boils down to calculating some dynamical correlation function like this. And the question is how you calculate it. So I want to, first of all, try to explain why it's hard. So what's the goal? So in if you have a thermalizing quantum system, you expect that, well, in principle, the microscopics is fully determined by quantum mechanical evolution using some Hamiltonian. For example, this is an example of a non-integral Ising model where I used the quantum information notation for spin operators, but it's just a spin model with longitudinal and transverse field Ising model. That's this example. And in the end, you want to calculate some correlation function, and it's hard. You need to calculate the time evolution of an operator. On the other hand, we know that if the system is thermalizing, then after some fairly short time, it reverts to some hydrodynamic behavior. And the hydrodynamic equation of motion are classical. They're determined by a finite set of transport coefficients. If you have only energy diffusion, as in this Ising model, it's particularly simple. It's just energy diffusion. And then we have an exact solution, of course. This is the diffusion propagator. And we even know how to calculate subleading corrections to diffusion due to nonlinearities and so on. That these are long time tails, but in principle, it's quite well understood and known. What is not clear is how hydrodynamics emerges exactly, and how do we compute these coefficients, hydrodynamics coefficients that occur in the diffusion equation. And from the fundamental perspective, how does reversible dynamics go to effective irreversible dynamics such as diffusion? So first let's try to understand why quantum evolution is hard to compute. And to do that and to set up the structure of what I'm doing, it's convenient to go from operator equations of motion, like Heisenberg equations, to something that looks like a Schrödinger equation. Basically, define an operator Hilbert space and use Ketz and Bras for operators. And to define an operator Hilbert space, we need an operator scalar product. And as long as I'll be dealing with an infinite temperature dynamics, namely dynamics that is not weighted by some thermal density matrix, then the simplest scalar product is the most useful, which is basically essentially the trace between the two operators. It should be A dagger times B, but there's a typo here. And so the trace is used as a scalar product. And then the time evolution operator is the generator of the time evolution is the Louvillian. The Louvillian is simply the commutation against the Hamiltonian. And we're going to deal in particular with spin models and other models, but if I deal with spin models, it's nice to consider the basis of operators to be the basis of Pauli strings. So these are strings of Pauli matrices on all the lattice, where the matrices, the index can run from 0 to 3, 0 being the identity matrix, and 1, 2, 3 are the different Pauli matrices. So these form a basis for this operator in operator space. Okay, so this is setting up the notation. Now, why is it hard? Well, if I try to calculate the correlation function, it means integrating the time evolution of O and of the initial operator, and then closing it again with O. So let's try to calculate the time evolution of O and of the operator O and do it naively by just expanding this to high arbitrary order in the time. And you see that at every higher order in time, we need to apply the Louvillian more and more times. And as you apply the Louvillian more and more times, you start with an operator that is generally a simple operator, and it becomes more and more complicated with further applications of the Louvillian. And you get this graph is basically a graph where the nodes are simply the Pauli strings, basis of Pauli strings. And you ask yourself every time you apply the Louvillian, to what set of Pauli strings can you get to after this application? And you see that you can get to more and more strings, exponentially many, as you go to n applications of the Louvillian. So now what is the basic idea? So this is why it's hard. It's hard because it's getting exponentially complex, the operator. The basic idea is to utilize this complexity. So operators flow from very simple to very complex, eventually becoming too complex to compute. But if they're sufficiently complex, then maybe the details don't matter and they flow to some kind of universal statistical description, and we can utilize this universal statistical description in order to formulate an exact dynamical description. So our goal is to exactly formulate this universal description of operators as they grow to become more and more complex. So this is going to be the outline of my talk. First, I'll give a little bit of background on the method I'm relying on, which is mapping the operators to a Krylov subspace. And I'm going to define measures of operator complexity in this space. Then I'm going to state a hypothesis for how the operators grow, which is going to be simple to describe in terms of this Krylov spaces. And I'll show, I'll support this hypothesis both by numerical evidence and analytical solutions of SYK models. Then I'm going to show how this hypothesis can be used, first of all, in order to get a more fundamental and generalized notion of chaos and the bound on chaos. So I'll get a generalized bound on chaos, which is tighter than the usual bound. And applies to where the usual bound might not apply, for example. And I'll show another application, which was the original motivation, to utilize the understanding of operator growth for actual computation of transport coefficients. Okay. So first of all, what is a Krylov basis? If I can generate an orthonormal basis of operators by starting with the operator I'm interested in. So for example, I want to calculate the correlation functions of this operator O, then I'll generate linearly independent basis set of vectors by repeatedly applying the Louvillian on it. This is essentially like you do in the Lanczos method with the Hamiltonian. And you orthogonalize after each application. You orthogonalize with respect to the vectors you have already created, and that basis you created is called the Krylov basis. The nice thing about this Krylov basis is that if you compute the matrix elements of the Liouvillean in this basis, you find that it's three diagonal. It's zero everywhere except these two off diagonals, which means that you have mapped this crazy graph that I talked about before onto a half line, and actually just a tight binding model on this half line, okay? With coefficients associated with the hopping matrix element of this tight binding model, B of n, okay? Now, this is not a new method, and there is a set of methods. These are also called recursion coefficients, and this whole program of computing recursion coefficients in order to compute dynamics is quite old. It started in the 80s, and there is a whole book about it, a pretty recent book. It's a pretty good book. I recommend it. It's not Ashwin Vishwanath, by the way. It's a different Vishwanath. So it's quite an old framework. I'm going to show what is new and what we find in this framework. As I said, the problem is mapped to a single particle hopping on a semi-infinite chain from a very complicated graph. And also, we have some notion of complexity that for now is just going to be intuitive, but later I'm going to put it on a firmer footing, which is the Krylov index is sort of an index of complexity. It tells you how, if your operator has reached further in this line, it means it's more complex because you need to apply the Liouvillean more times in order to get there, okay? So it gives us some intuitive notion of the complexity of the operator. So let's try to get a feel of what is happening in this Krylov space. I can define now, yeah?
So this notion of operator complexity, is it related to the growth of the size of the operator?
I'll show later how it's related. Yes, it's related, and I'm going to show how more precisely. But for now, it's just kind of an intuitive notion. But going to be...
They don't be exactly the same.
No, it's going to bound the size.
I see.
Okay. But for now, so let's get, so I'm going to use this basis. So now we should think of operators as wave functions, and this is the wave function in this basis. Phi n of t is basically the wave function in this basis, and the time dependence is basically determined by the Schrödinger equation of a tight binding model of a single particle. So here is an example of how the wave function phi of n develops in time for some certain set of coefficients bn, okay? Just an example. And interesting properties that we want to know are, for example, the autocorrelation function of the original operator is just the wave function at point zero in this tight binding chain. That would be just the correlation function. Another interesting quantity is what we call Krylov complexity. We'll define better why we call it a complexity later, but it's the expectation value of n, of the index n. And that's defined in this way, just like the expectation value of the position of a particle. Okay? So we call it the Krylov complexity of the operator. So obviously everything depends on these recursion coefficients. It seems like a trivial problem. It's a single particle problem, but how it behaves depends on how these Lanczos coefficients behave. So actually, for certain types of models, one can get asymptotic behaviors. For free models, like free fermions, for example, or Ising model that can be mapped to free fermions with certain operators, one can get that Bn's saturate to a constant. There are certain integrable models where at least approximate solutions show that they behave like square root of, asymptotically, like square root of n. And in fact, because of these solutions, people have usually taken these to be square root of n, just extrapolated them as if they're square root of n for any model. Nobody pointed out what happens in generic chaotic models. One does know that you cannot go faster than linear. They cannot grow faster than linear in n. I'll discuss this a little later. What we do, part of what we do is we replace this by something. So our hypothesis is that for generic non-integrable models, the growth of the Lanchov's coefficients or recursion coefficients is linear in the index n, asymptotically, and which is the fastest it can be. And in 1D, it turns out it cannot grow linearly. It has to grow linearly up to a logarithmic and suppressed by a logarithmic correction. And we thank another Berkeley student who actually pointed us to a theorem that excludes this linear growth only in one dimension. And in 2D, actually, there are examples where it saturates linear growth and beyond this log correction. So we know that in 2D and above, there is no log correction. So in some sense, one can phrase the hypothesis is that generic chaotic models, operators grow as fast as they can possibly can by allowed by various combinatorial factors and geometric factors in their dimension. Okay, so we'll see why this is important, but it's also important to understand that this growth of the Lanchov's coefficients, which seems quite abstract, has important consequences. Yes?
Can the beta, could you have a negative 1 to the n term?
Sorry. There could be, what do you say?
Could it be this plus negative 1 to the n? Does this just...
There could be oscillations, yeah. The order one term can be oscillating, for example, and that would be actually important for correlation functions. There could be 1/n terms that are oscillating that are actually still important for certain things. But this is just the leading behavior. So I'm not going to touch this beta, for example. Yeah, there can be an oscillating term. So what I want to stress now, that this linear growth of the Lanchov's coefficients implies something about observable correlation functions. So one can show quite easily, it's a matter of a few lines, that there is a direct relation between the high frequency limit of the spectral function phi of omega, which is just the Fourier infinite temperature, it's just the Fourier transform of the correlation function C of t. So if I take the spectral function phi of omega, it has, and I have Lanchov's coefficients that grow linearly in n, this implies one-to-one that phi of omega has an exponential decay in omega in the high frequency limit. And the coefficient alpha that determines the growth of these coefficients also determines the decay at high frequencies, okay? So this is important. You'll see later that actually this means that the high frequency limit of the correlation function is a highly, highly non-trivial object. It determines the growth of operators. It has nothing to do with short time behavior. It's not short time behavior. To understand short time behavior, you need some intermediate frequency range of order the bandwidth, but not the high frequency limit, which means frequency much, much larger than the local bandwidth of your model. So the operator growth rate, which we call alpha, is directly related to the high frequency limit of the spectral function. And in 1D, by the way, this is faster than exponentially decaying because of this log correction. It gets a log correction in the exponent. So now some evidence for why am I saying this hypothesis? So some evidence. So we calculated a whole range of one-dimensional models where there is presumably also a logarithmic correction, but it's very hard to see it in numerics. And we also did an analytic calculation of the SYK model, so you can calculate these moments, these Lanchov's coefficients by calculating moments of the Liouvillian. So Liouvillian to some power n become exactly a sum of Mellon diagrams. So, and one can rewrite them in terms of some Dyson equations and calculate it exactly. So this is an example of the SYK model. These are various non-integrable models. These are also non-integrable models with a weakly interacting Ising models with increasing interaction strength. So the non-interacting model has a saturating Lanchov's coefficients, and interacting ones immediately after a very small interaction, you see already that it goes to a linear slope. In fact, one can show that this linear slope is only logarithmically sensitive to the interaction strength, and mainly dependent on the bandwidth. Okay, so what is the phenomenology of linearly growing, what is the phenomenology of the dynamics of linearly growing coefficients? If I have, so to understand the phenomenology, it's nice to have a solvable model. And in fact, if the Lantos coefficients grow like this with square root of n times n minus 1 plus eta, then one can formulate an exact solution for the time-dependent wave function. And also, that implies an exact solution for the Krylov complexity as a function of time. And one gets at long times that it grows exponentially in time, where this growth rate of the operator exactly is the exponent associated with the exponential growth of this complexity. So, and that's the fastest they can grow. So the, if I had one way to see why I cannot have faster than linear growth is if I had a solution that grows faster than bn growing faster than linear, we would get that the operator would reach an infinite n at finite time, which just doesn't make sense. It violates all Lieb-Robinson bounds. By the way, also, this naively seems to violate Lieb-Robinson bounds if you thought of n as just the size of the operator, because the Lieb-Robinson bound tells you that the size just grows linearly, while here we see that this complexity grows much faster. And the reason is that the size of the operator only grows due to changes of the operator on the boundary, but most of the complexity actually grows due to changes of the interior of the operator. So that's why it can grow exponentially, while the size of the operator only grows linearly. But the fact that there is an exponentially growing complexity somehow reminds me of quantum chaos, and there is obviously the question of whether this is somehow related to a Lyapunov exponent in quantum chaos. So before actually making a precise connection, let's have a suggestive calculation and calculate both alpha and lambda, both the Lyapunov exponent and this growth rate of the operator in a model where we can calculate it exactly, the large Q SYK model. In fact, we can calculate it for SYK model of any Q. Q is the number of interacting fermions in the SYK model. So number of interacting fermions in one interaction term. So Q equals 4 means 4 Majorana fermions appearing in an interaction term. If you calculate, you can calculate alpha and the Lyapunov exponent. And this is just a definition that we take from this paper. We normalize this alpha by this J. So in the limit Q goes to infinity, the Lyapunov exponent and this alpha become one, you see. And if you look at the numbers for any Q, you see that these numbers are very similar, and always alpha is a little bit larger than lambda. And in the large Q limit, they're the same. Now let me establish a more precise connection between alpha and lambda. And to define this, I want to define a more precise notion of complexity. So let me define a notion of Q complexity. A Q complexity would be a semi-definite, a positive semi-definite superoperator, meaning operator acting in this operator Hilbert space. So I write it formally like this. It's where Q alphas are the eigenvalues, and they all must be greater or equal to 0. And an additional requirement is that the complexity cannot change by more than a bounded value, let's say B, it should be, or D, this should be D here. It has a bounded change when I act on a complexity eigenvalue with the Liouvillean. It cannot change the complexity by more than some bounded value. Another requirement is the initial operator has zero complexity. Uh, So if I have these definitions, this is what I'll call complexity. And the intuition is that it's something that grows, but grows only in a bounded way every time I apply the Liouvillean. So the Q complexity is going to be the expectation value of Q in the growing operator, okay? The Q complexity of the operator. So I want to give you some examples. So the simplest example and the one that's most interesting to me is the Krylov complexity. And here is the definition of Q in this case. It's sum over n times the Krylov vectors. So you can easily see immediately that it satisfies all the requirements of complexity by definition. Operator size is also a complexity. And the eigenvalues of complexity are just Pauli strings, eigenvectors of complexity. And another example is the Ottok. So that's a little bit less trivial, but one can show that the out-of-time order correlation at infinite temperature satisfies all these requirements of a complexity and is also a complexity, if it's properly defined in this way. But let me not go into the details. But so we have defined kind of a family of complexity measures, of which members of this family are the Krylov complexity and also the Ottok. Next, I want to prove that the Krylov complexity has a special status here in that it actually bounds all the other complexities. So there is a theorem, and in order to see the proof, you should look at our paper. But the growth of any Q complexity is bounded by the growth of the Krylov complexity. So basically, it means that Q of t for any Q complexity is less or equal than some number, constant number c, times the Krylov complexity. And the implication of this is that the exponential growth with alpha, where alpha is this operator growth rate in the Krylov space, is a bound on lambda. And the nice thing about this is, so there is a new generalized bound that works as long as, in fact, it works generally, I guess. But it makes sense if the hypothesis we made that Krylov vectors grow, Lanczos coefficients grow linearly, then it makes sense. So 2 alpha is larger than lambda L. And I want to note that I proved it all for infinite temperature. We believe that it works for any finite T, but we don't have a rigorous proof of this for any finite T. I'll show evidence that it works, but I don't have a proof for that. So let me go to finite temperature now. Oops. Yeah, let's go to finite temperature. So in finite temperature, I have to revise my definition of the scalar product of two operators. And one possible way to define the scalar product is through a trace weighted by the density matrix. This is a scalar product that would give me the usual correlation function between operator A and B. But I'll use a different scalar product where I take the density matrix and spread it to the two sides of the operator A, which is basically like the usual high energy physics way of regularizing out of time order correlations. And there is a direct relation between the correlation function I calculate in this high energy physics way and the usual correlation function. It's just like a shift by I beta over 2. And that implies on the spectral function that the spectral function is the usual spectral function over a cinch of beta omega over 2. Okay, this is just the relation between the two spectral functions. But I'm going to now look at all these quantities with the H. So let's look at a finite T bound on chaos. So in the low temperature limit, what we have for the spectral function is this over cinch. So this over cinch is something that bounds the correlation function from above due to the usual cutoff. But then there is also the low temperature behavior the cinch gives. If the temperature is smaller than the usual cutoff, then what will dominate my high frequency behavior is simply the temperature. Okay, and just by the fact that this Krylov growth rate, alpha, is related to the decay of the spectral function, we get this, we recover the bound, the usual bound on chaos. Sorry. Now I can also do it for any temperature. For any temperature, I can calculate both this alpha, the growth rate of Lanczos coefficients, and the Lyapunov exponent for the SYK model at large Q. And you see that both of them behave exactly the same way in the large Q limit. So this green line is just the Maldacena bound. This black line here is the upper bound at infinite temperature. And this is the actual behavior of both alpha and lambda. And you see that it saturates the alpha, the Lyapunov exponent indeed saturates the bound set by alpha in this model. Yeah.
So the correlator that you're defining, is that an autocorrelator?
Which correlator? Yeah. So I'm looking at an autocorrelation function. One can also do it for
spatially.
In principle, yes. Yeah. Of course, one can do it. One can generalize it for this. Yes.
It's the same as other tensors.
Yeah, because even if it's not autocorrelation function, only one of the operators is time dependent. So you can right. So you define the alpha based on the time dependent operator. Then in the end, you have to sandwich it with another operator. But the alpha is basically based on the operator that you evolve in time. Now, so alpha is operator dependent. That's a good point. But it, from numerics, it seems like it's very weakly dependent on what operator you compute, and we believe that it's probably, unless the operator is very special, like a conserved operator or a nearly conserved operator, they would all be, any operator will have many modes, growing modes, and it will be, at long times, will be basically most affected by the fastest growing mode, and that will be the same alpha. It's like a spectrum of Lyapunov exponents. There was some questions. Okay. So
can I ask So lambda L has a bound.
Yeah, yeah.
So does alpha have a bound that's independent of lambda L?
Alpha has a bound. I think alpha is bounded only by the, in principle, only by some physical quantities like the bandwidth or,
There's no universal.
There is no universal bound. But at low temperatures, with this regularization, alpha is bounded by the temperature, basically, because the temperature sets the high frequency cutoff for the spectral function at low temperatures. But if you change regularization, then you get alpha that is independent of temperature effect, essentially, and basically doesn't provide a tight bound.
So the statement of the bound as you have it, you know,
yes.
So lambda L is only well defined if you don't have locality.
So that's right. So, well, I think maybe lambda L is well defined at low temperatures, but I don't know. But it's true that this alpha doesn't care about locality, no locality. You get exponential growth of the complexity. And so that's why I think it's more fundamental bound on and more fundamental notion of quantum chaos, this growth of complexity, more than the out of time order correlation. That's my view of this. You can view it as a bound to the out of time order correlation, but you can also say that it's maybe a more fundamental notion of chaos.
More fundamental notion of chaos, but there's no, if lambda L is not well defined, then you don't have a bound on alpha.
Lambda L is always well defined, at least in the sense of logarithmic derivative. It's not well defined in.
Okay, so I see.
Yeah.
So the bound applies to that logarithmic derivative.
I think so. Yes. Yeah. Because it basically tells you that the complexity grows faster than the out of it. So what really the theorem says is that the complexity grows faster than the out of time order correlation. So it doesn't really need, you don't need to assume an exponential growth. Um, Okay, so okay, maybe I'll pass on that. It's, so as I said, 1D models are special. So one may might say, oh, you don't have an actual exponentially growing complexity for 1D models because of this log correction. And it's true at long times, but one can show at least at low in the low temperature limit that actually there is a parametrically long time of exponential growth also in one dimension in spite of the logarithmic correction. So everything I said still holds about the relation to chaos, still holds even in one dimensional systems at low temperatures. At high temperatures, 1D systems, one has to be a bit more careful. So another thing is where the Maldacena bound does not apply, but our bound does, is classical systems. So in fact, the whole framework of this Krylov spaces, I can also apply in the same way to a classical system. So if I make my Liouvillean the classical Liouvillean, which is the Poisson brackets against the classical Hamiltonian, and operators are functions on some classical phase space, then I can describe the growing complexity of these functions by exactly the same method. So now I have the same kind of operator algebra, and we also tried it on a well-known model for classical chaos called the Paris-Feingold model. It's just a two-spin model. And on the right, you see the numerically computed complexity growth alpha and the Lyapunov exponent lambda L. And you see that indeed it provides a bound from above. And there is one point where this bound is saturated, one point on this dynamical phase diagram. And in fact, this point in the dynamical phase diagram is exactly where it's the only point where there are no special CAM regions in this chaotic model. Otherwise, there are CAM regions. So this bound also works in classical systems. Okay, so the last thing I want to talk about before some outlook and further extensions, I want to talk about the application to computing, operator decay, and transport. So what is the basic idea? The basic idea is, first of all, use numerics, basically exact diagonalization, to compute the first m recursion coefficients numerically up to some. So for example, here you see that I can compute up to about 25. Then complete the fitted universal model, complete this with a fitted universal model, which is this exactly solvable model, which continues at linear slope, with a linear slope, and stitch the asymptotic linear behavior to the numerically determined behavior at short distances or a small number of Lanczos coefficients. How do you exactly do this stitching? Well, to do this stitching exactly, we note that one can replace this whole matrix by a matrix times the Green's function of these at this point of the universal model. Now, the Green's function of the universal model can be determined exactly because it's exactly solvable. And therefore, the Green's function, which is basically the Laplace transform of the autocorrelation function, can be written as a continued fraction expansion that ends at the nth point, the last point that I calculated exactly, times the Green's function of the universal model with the slope that I fitted. Okay, so in this way, I got a meromorphic approximation for the Green's function. I can, now it's analytic, I can compute all the poles. I search for the lowest pole, and that would be my diffusion pole. So I look at, so here is an example. This is the lowest pole. I look at how it, I'm calculating, for example, if this is my Ising model that I want to compute diffusion constant for, I now take this energy operator, Ising energy operator, and Fourier transform it to some finite wave vector k, and I look at the Green's function as a function of this wave vector k, or q here, and fit to a parabola, and that gives me the diffusion constant. Okay, so I get the diffusion constant, and this is what we get numerically here, and it fits with various up to about 2% with other numerical methods to compute the diffusion constant for the Ising model. This is for 1D Ising model. I have to say that in 1D, all of this is a little bit sketchy because there is a logarithmic correction that can, we don't know what it does to these things, and we can't capture it. But in principle, this method is not confined to one dimension. You can also do it in 2 dimensions. The problem is that in 2 dimensions, you'll not be able to compute 30 Lanczos coefficients, but maybe you'll be able to calculate 12, 15. Yes?
How did you compute these 25 terms to begin with?
Yeah, so the way to do it fast is we only looked at translationally invariant models. So we, and only translationally invariant model, and we looked at translationally invariant operators. So for example, like momentum zero operators. So there is no finite size effects, right? So we just apply the Liouvillian brute force to this. Now, because it's spin models, one can do it very efficiently using just binary operations, like using notations for spins. That makes it more, even more efficient. But in principle, the fact that it's a translationally invariant problem, that you don't have a size to your system. The size is just related to how many times you apply the Liouvillian.
But after applying 25 times,
yes,
operators that are size 25.
The largest operator you have, the largest, but most of it, most of the weight is in much, much smaller operators than size 25. You have maybe very few size 25 operators, right, maybe even one only.
The vector space dimension is 4 to the
25. Not exactly, because you don't have to keep all this vector space. And it's very rare states that are 25 size 25. The average length basically grows with the Lieb-Robinson bound, so it grows much, much more only linearly. So doing.
How large is the dimension of?
Yeah, so I have graphs. What is the number of participating strings as a function of the Krylov? And that's non-universal. It grows exponentially, of course, with n. But the rate at which it grows exponentially depends on the model. In general, if your model has more terms, it will grow faster. And in 2 dimensions, it grows faster than 1 dimension. That's why it can only go to 12 there. OK, so just summary, but then I want to discuss some outlook. First of all, there is a hypothesis for the universal operator dynamics, which is supported by extensive evidence of linear growth of the Lanczos coefficients. This is directly related to exponential suppression of the high-frequency response function to that same operator. And it implies an exponential growth of operator complexity that gives a generalized bound to chaos. And the hypothesis enables a new numerical scheme to compute dynamical correlations in transport. Now, there are many questions still in this, and there is also many interesting new directions one can take from here. I want to summarize a few of them. So one of them is, first of all, should we maybe define chaos in quantum mechanics? There is some, I think, fundamental deficiency in out-of-time order correlations as a definition of chaos, because basically they need some kind of semi-classical limit to be even well-defined. And there is no intrinsic quantum definition of chaos. So all the definitions of chaos have to somehow resort to some kind of semi-classical limit, while here it might be that this complexity measure gives you a non-semi-classical definition of chaos that is defined more generally. And there is another bonus that it is related to a high frequency limit of a measurable correlation function and not to something that you need to be able to reverse time to measure. So these high frequency limit of two-point functions have been measured in NMR in other cases very, very well. So, okay, so that's one thing. Another way, so it's related to your question, maybe to Gifra's question, how can we calculate more Lanczos coefficients? So in 1D, one can try to do this not brute force, but use MPO representation and do a truncation with SVD to calculate the Krylov basis. And we tried to do it, and we were pretty surprised that actually the operator entanglement appears to grow only logarithmically with n, with the Krylov index, which means you could probably go to very large number of coefficients, doing at least in one-dimensional systems using MPO methods. And there is a question of why it grows so slowly, and is there some structure that we're missing that tells you why all of them have to be low entanglement states, or in some sense, low entanglement. Another extension is one can ask, what is the general behavior of these Lanczos coefficients in integrable models, not in non-integrable ones? And in particular, maybe the most interesting non-integrable integrable model is MBL, and whether this will give us a systematic way of describing local integrals of motion in MBL. And we already see systematic deviations from the hypothesis in MBL, and we understand it based on the universal model for many-body localized systems. And the last thing I want to mention is, if I have a finite size system, what is the time scale on which this exponential growth of the complexity saturates to some other slower growth? And that turns out to be, because it's an exponential growth, it saturates at the time scale which is logarithmic in the system size. It doesn't saturate, but it changes from exponential growth to a slower growth rate. And that's because the largest operators in your basically reach and start to feel the system size. And that saturation at a log L time is at least to me, reminds me of several exact solutions by Prozen and Chocker from the last year, which find a tauless time, which scales as a log of system size, and was pretty surprising based on Lieb-Robinson bounds. And this is maybe one way to understand it. Okay, so this is my...
So in the last slide, you mentioned this error first time that found in other models.
Yes.
But log L is only 1D, at least in the example that...
Yeah. I agree. So, So first of all, this is not all of these models are Hamiltonian models, and these models were all Floquet models. So I think there is something fundamentally different. We're trying to generalize this to Floquet models, but the generalization is highly non-trivial. You cannot use the same because, you don't have the Hermitian generator that you have there. So I think it's different, but maybe it gives an intuition why, in principle, you can get something like this.
So you nicely related what you're doing to the high-frequency behavior of the spectral function. Joseph started the talk by motivating it with transport, DC
yes.
transport.
Yes.
Where's the low frequency?
Right.
Is there
right.
anything that you can see this?
Well, in the end, we did get low frequency quantities like the diffusion constant.
Right, but in terms of bonding,
Yeah, that's right. Because there are two components here. There are two components that are, in fact, not trivially related to each other. So we have an operator, and the operator has components that grow to very long distances very fast, exponentially fast, and that growth is related to the high frequency limit of the correlation function. And there are components that remain behind and decay slowly, for example, and these are related to the transport. And they're not simply related to each other. And that's why it's not, I don't know how to make, and the reason why they're not simply related is, for example, the rate of dissipation, the rate of diffusion is not set only by the growth rate of the operator, but also by the first, by the value, non-universal value of the first few coefficients, and also by maybe subleading terms like oscillations you have in the spectral, in this Lanczos coefficients as a function of n. If they oscillate, you can get backscattering terms that give you long time tails, for example. So yeah, the short answer is that they're not very simply related to each other, unfortunately.
So, the same way, speaker.